Hare. Kunjabi Gopi Janavalla Bhagiri Varadari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Paribraja Gacharya Ashtol Darashatta Sri Sri Mad Abhay Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Hare Krishna Kartal player. What's your name?
Vasily.
Vasily. Okay, where'd you come from?
Based in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. Vasily. Good morning, everyone. Today we're reading from the third canto. Chapter 13, The Appearance of Lord Varaha. And oh, where did it go? Text 29. There it is, text 29, yes. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'm going to give the computer screen a lot of work today. We're going to focus on the Sanskrit because the purport is shorter than the verse. So the verse says, diving into the water like a great mountain, Lord Bor divided the middle of the ocean and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord, O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. So the first line is Savajrakutanga Nipata Vega. Savajrakutanga Nipata Vega. So, pundits, anybody recognize any words in here that you know? Vega? No, but it is a word that probably some know. Yep, it was a car back in the 70s. Okay. How about Vacho Vegam, Manasakroda Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Pasta Vegam? So, does that ring a bell? Okay, he says pushing. Anybody else?
Restraint.
Restraint, okay. Actually, vega means pushing, and it's translated in a lot of different ways. In the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna shows the universal form to Arjuna, and the description is, I see all the soldiers rushing into your mouths like waves in the ocean. And so the waves, the vegas, so it's like a force that pushes you like a wave. And so...
Urges,
yes. Or if you're Bengali, arjus. We've got to learn that. Urges, pushings, and so here it's nipata vega. So nipata, the forceful falling of varaha. So we got this great big varaha falling into the ocean, and the ocean, it's not the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean, which is really big, and there's... And the ocean is being split in half, going down the middle, and like two arms are going up saying, don't cut me in half, don't harm me. So we're going to open that up in the Sanskrit here. So nipata vega means very forcefully falling. So vraha is really big. In the song by, it was a few verses back, song by Jayadev, Kshitirihavi pulatare tishthati tavaprishte dharani dharana kina chakra garishte. It says that he was carrying the earth on the tip of his tusk, and it looked like just a little tiny spot on the moon. The earth looked like... So there's different ways of translating it. He's so small, the earth looks like a little spot on his tusk. He's so big, the earth looks small. So the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, what would it take to split that in half? I mean, you can't do that. But then this ocean makes the earth insignificant. If you look up in the sky, that's the biggest thing we can see. So that ocean is even bigger than the sky. It's half of the sky. The sky, it's half of the universe, is this ocean. Vraha is so big, the ocean is saying, I'm afraid. So Savajra Kutanga. Vajra Kutanga is a body like a great mountain. Vajrakuta Anga. So Vajra usually means thunderbolts, but Vajrakuta, somehow that means mountains. I guess something that attracts thunderbolts. Vajrakuta Anga. So his body was body like a great mountain. So sa, that, Vajrakuta Anga, body like a great mountain, Nipata Vega. So here we go. Let's try that first line again. Everybody ready? Savajrakutanga nipata vega. Savajrakutanga nipata vega. Vishirna kukshi stanayan udanvan. Vishirna kukshi stanayan udanvan. Okay, and the word for word, Vishirna means bifurcating, cutting in half. Vishirna, kukshi, the middle portion, stanayan, resounding like, udanvan, the ocean. So I think this stanayan, resounding like, is talking about the next line, which is Iva Artha, like a distressed person. The ocean was crying out like a distressed person. So we've got this great big Varaha. His body is big like a mountain. Nipata Vega, it's creating a big splash and a big disruption. He is bifurcating, Vishirna, bifurcating Kukshi, the middle portion of the ocean, which is Stanayan, resounding like a distressed person, Udanvan, the ocean. So we'll read that second line again, or let's read the first two lines. Savajra Kutanga Nipata Vega. Vishir Nakukshi Stanayan Udanvan. Utsrishta Dirgurmi Bujar Ivartash. Utsrishta Dirgurmi Bujar Ivartash. Okay, so word for word, utsrishta, creating. So we've heard this word before, shrishti. Shrishti means creation. Utsrishta, dirga, high, urmi, waves, bujai, by the arms. So the arms looked like, the waves looked like arms. Ivartash, Iva Arta, like a distressed person. Okay, what are the four kinds of people that approach Krishna? Anybody know the verse? I know you know the verse. Anybody else? Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes, wealth. Artha, Jingyasur, Artarti, Gyanicha, Bharatarshava. So four kinds of people. And Artha means someone who's in distress. So then the last line. Chukrosha prayed loudly, Yagya Ishwara, O Master of all sacrifices, Pahi, please protect Ma, unto me, iti, thus. Chukrosha yagyeshvara pahi meti. Chukrosha yagyeshvara pahi meti. Savajra kutanga nipata vega. Vishir nakukshi stanayan udanvan. Utsrishta dirghormi bujari vartas. Chukrosha yagyeshvara pahimeti. Translation. Diving into the water like a giant mountain, Lord Bohr divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord. O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. Purport. Even the great ocean was perturbed by the falling of the mountain-like body of the transcendental boar, and it appeared to be frightened, as if death were imminent. And that's the purport. Wasn't there an earthquake? I just glanced at the news, and they said there's a threat of a tidal wave coming into the West Coast. Was that yesterday? Okay. Would have been a really big tidal wave if we saw it here. But yeah, just a little tremor of the earth settling, and then it creates a tidal wave and washes over Japan or Malaysia and washes people out into the ocean. That's just a little earthquake. So what to speak of Bohr, who is bigger than the earth. He's big enough to lift the earth, and he's falling into the ocean, creating such a disturbance. So several verses back, Brahma was saying, this is wonderful. He appeared to be the size of the tip of a thumb. And what was it? Was it a gandushta? Anybody remember that? Gandushta? Is that the word? Something like that. I've heard it before. I thought, well, that's an interesting measurement, one thumb. But this was the tip of the thumb. So just a tiny tip of the thumb that would come out of his nostril. Nothing very big. And then he's growing bigger and bigger. And Prabhupada compares that to the Hare Krishna movement, how it started very small. He says it somewhere. I looked back. I didn't see it in the recent. Was it in some of the earlier verses? Anybody remember that? Prabhupada talking about his ISKCON movement. Everyone was surprised at how quickly it's grown from practically nothing. And he compares it to Varaha, coming from the nostril of Brahma. And so, let's see, what's next? It's a recurring theme in the Bhagavatam to show us that Krishna is everywhere. Nrsimha was hidden in the pillar, couldn't see him, but then he came out and he was so big and he made such a loud sound that elephants all over the planet were scared of that sound. Hiranyakashipu was scared also. Matsya, he appeared, just a little tiny fish. King Satyavrat was drinking water, took a palm full of water, and there was a fish in there, so he dumped the fish back, took another. The fish just kept popping into his hand and saying, protect me, I need your help, you're the king, protect me. So he said, all right, put him in a little pot. And the fish instantly grew too big for the pot, put him in a bigger pot, put him in a bigger pot, put him in a pond, put him in a lake. And finally he got too big for the lake and he dragged him to the ocean. And the fish said, you're supposed to protect me. You're throwing me out in the ocean. Who's going to protect me now? And then they had a conversation, and then Matsya revealed, I'm actually the Supreme Lord. And then he gave him all these directions. So he just became so big, started off small. And so that's what Krishna does. And our service, we can take on some small service, and it can just turn into something really big. Like a banyan seed, there's a potential for a whole banyan tree and a little tiny banyan seed. How big is a, has anyone ever seen a banyan seed? I heard they're not very big. Anybody know? Mustard seed size? I don't think they're very big. But in there is the potential for a giant tree that can take up like a half a mile, a square half a mile. But it's not that every seed will turn into a banyan tree. So we may get some service, how to turn that service to make it grow and get bigger and bigger. Just a couple days ago, we were at one of our neighbor's houses, and Kirti Raj and Hari Puja were talking about how they were involved in spreading Krishna consciousness all over Russia. And it started really small. They were in Calcutta, and the wife of the ambassador to Poland came to the temple, and she liked it. She danced in the kirtan and was friendly with the devotees. And someone told Prabhupada about that, and Prabhupada said, immediately asked, do we have any Polish devotees here? And Kirti Raj, his family's from Poland. So they picked him out and another devotee, and they said, you go and visit them. Make friends with them. Cultivate that friendship, and then go to Poland and open a temple. And that's how it started, just from the wife of the ambassador from Poland visiting the temple in Calcutta. Kirti Raj eventually went to Poland with his wife. They had no idea what they were going to do there. He said, we're just sitting on the curb in Los Angeles. We sold all the little tiny things we had. Went to Poland. We didn't know what we were going to do, how we were going to go about it, but Prabhupada told us to do it. They went there, they met people, they made friends, they got things going. At that time, Poland was part of the Soviet Union. They made contacts, and then they came back, lived in California longer, and they were getting books printed in Russian languages. Kirti Raj said he would go to the shipping ports, and if he saw a ship from Russia, they would go up to it and say, what a beautiful ship. Can we take a tour? We'd like to look around. And they were so proud of their ship. Like, yeah, we'll give you a tour. And so while walking around, taking a tour, he would find a place. He would get a book out and tuck it in wherever, you know, little hiding places where someone would find it later on. He also went to the book shows, Moscow book shows. And he got to go to Moscow a few times. Anyway, things just grew. It started off really small, just tucking books into ships. And also in the shipyards, he would see a pallet and see that it was marked to go to Russia. So you know, they had the shrink wrap all around it. He would find a little space and he'd tuck a couple of books in there, just to somehow get books into Russia, because he knew how hungry people are for books there. And then, when the whole thing opened up in 1989, the devotees were allowed to come to India, and that's a whole other story. But then as things opened and they were able to print the books legally in Russia, Hari Puja said every day, they got a stack of letters this tall from people requesting Bhagavad Gitas. We want to buy a Bhagavad Gita. I mean, a big stack of every day. Plus the devotees were going out distributing books. So it just got so big. And now we see Russians everywhere, Russian devotees. And so it started with just a little thing. Somebody visited the Calcutta temple. Prabhupada said, make friends with them and follow up. And Prabhupada also, I mean, a lot of other devotees were there when his guru was telling everyone, preach in English, go to the West. But somehow Prabhupada took it up and he ran with it, and everyone is amazed. How did it do that? So, just like Krishna can put a whole banyan tree in a little seed, or he can come out as the tip of the thumb, the size of a tip of a thumb, and then split the ocean in half. So, let's see. A tiny desire can grow into a puzzling maze of desires. We have desires all the time. Some of them develop, and some we drop immediately. The 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is about that. It starts with the upside-down banyan tree, which is the reflection of the reality, but it's reflected on desire. The rest of the chapter 15 talks about, because of desires, we're carried from one body into the next. Some people are able to see that. Most people are not. So how do we choose which desire to grow, and how do we make them grow? I was in India in 1989 when all of the devotees came from Russia. We greeted them at the airport. It was just amazing, somebody came from the moon or something. We never thought we'd be able to see the Russian devotees with all of the persecution that was going on. Somehow they got out, and half of that group, there were 59 of them, half of them had come directly from prison or being tied to a table in a psychiatric hospital. They were greeted by the devotees in Calcutta. We toured, we went to the Calcutta temple, we went to Mayapur, and in Mayapur there was just such a big reception. As they all stepped off the bus, each devotee was given a flower garland. Devotees with tears in their eyes were greeting them, and they thought I was Russian too. So I just went along with it. I tried to tell them, but they didn't speak English. So I just went with it, and I said, Hari Bolsky, Hari Bolsky. And we went in the temple, and there was this great big kirtan, everybody dancing in a circle, crying, and they're just so happy. And then they stopped and they made announcements, and they said, finally, the Russians are here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur predicted it, and we were always wondering, when are we going to see the Russians here? And today it happened, and everyone applauded. And then they talked some more, and at some point somebody said, and it's all due to Kirtiraj. And everyone just erupted in Hari Bol and cheers, and Kirtiraj just like put his head down and like, no, no, no. He said, all I did was make myself available. All I did was show up. There was something that needed to be done, and I just showed up for it, and I followed through. He keeps saying that. I didn't do anything. So here is Krishna. I'm really squeezing as much as I can out of this verse because there's only one sentence of purport. So Krishna likes to play in the water. Here he is jumping in the ocean, and the great big waves are going up as if they're arms of the ocean saying, help, you should protect me, you shouldn't be cutting me in half. The ocean apparently feels it's a threat, the size of and the strength of Varaha. And when we were kids, my brother and I, at the beach, the waves would come in and we'd punch them and just pretend we're beating up the ocean. But we knew we weren't doing anything. It was just fun. But when Krishna plays, it actually is, there is something to it. And learning how to splash is one of the 64 arts that Krishna learned while he was in Gurukul. Did you know that? It's one of the 64 arts. Yes, it's in there. What are some of the other arts he learned? Let's just try this out. Reading someone's mind, yes. How to talk to animals and understand their language, yeah. How to dress beautifully, yes. Yeah. Okay, he learned how to guess what's in someone's hand and how to dance. And poetry. Oh, yeah, yeah. And some mathematic things. What is it called? Sudoku? Kind of like that. How to decorate the face and the hair. How to decorate with flowers. They also experimented with the intoxicating effects of different beverages. And it only took him one day. Each art only took him one day. But he learned how to splash water. Like, that's as important. He also learned how to disguise himself. Anything else? All right, so anyway, today's topic, the most important is he learned how to splash in the water. Splash water. Splash. And let's see. Now, let's see if it's going to come up. I hope it's still there. Where did it go? All right. I got to look this up. Sorry, folks. It's going to be a minute. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we read about Lord Chaitanya splashing in the water or watching the devotees splashing in the water. Let's see. I think it was chapter. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no. I had it, and then it disappeared. Where is it? Oh, shucks. Cleansing of the Gundicha temple. Performance of the Vrindavan pastimes. Chapter 14. It's around 75. I hope that's it. Yeah, here we go. All right. Today's a good day to read about splashing in the water. There were many gardens near the Gundicha temple, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees used to perform the pastimes of Vrindavan in each of them. In the lake named Indrajyumna, he sported in the water. So this is the Rath Yatra, goes to the Gundicha temple, and while the Lord is there, Lord Chaitanya feels like he's back in Vrindavan. And so he feels very peaceful and settled for that period. The Lord personally splashed all the devotees with water, and the devotees surrounding him on all sides also splashed the Lord. While in the water, they sometimes formed one circle and sometimes many circles, and while in the water, they used to play cymbals and imitate the croaking of frogs. Sometimes two would pair off to fight in the water, One would emerge victorious and the other defeated, and the Lord would watch all this fun. The first sporting took place between Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu, who threw water upon each other. Advaita Acharya was defeated, and he later began to rebuke Nityananda Prabhu, calling him ill names. Swarup Damodar and Vidyanidhi also threw water upon each other, and Murari Gupta and Vasudev Datta also sported in that way. Another duel took place between Srivast Thakur and Gadadhar Pandit, and yet another between Raghava Pandit and Vakrishwar Pandit. Thus, they all engaged in throwing water. Indeed, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya engaged in water sports with Sri Ramananda Roy, and they both lost their gravity and became like children. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the exuberance of Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy, he smiled and spoke to Gopinathacharya, "Tell the Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy to stop their childish play, because they are both learned scholars and very grave and great personalities." Gopinathacharya replied, "I believe that one drop of the ocean of your great mercy has swelled up upon them. A drop from the ocean of your mercy can drown great mountains like Sumeru and Mandara. Since these two gentlemen are little hills by comparison, it is no wonder that they are being drowned in the ocean of your mercy." After Gopinathacharya finished talking, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled and, calling for Advaita Acharya, made him act like the Sheshanaga bed. Lying down on Advaita Prabhu, who was floating on the water, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrated the pastime of Sheshashayi Vishnu. Manifesting his personal potency, Advaita Acharya floated about on the water, carrying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After sporting in the water for some time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to his place at Aitota, accompanied by his devotees. Okay, that's what I got for water sports. Let's see if there's anything else in here. Okay, Krishna enjoys empowering his devotees to make a splash in the world. We're back on that original theme. Take on some service, do something to change the world, like to shake up the world. It happened to Brahma while he was considering a problem. It just appeared as if separate from him. So sometimes Krishna makes you do the thing, or sometimes you just watch it happen. But just based on your desire, it happens. And the prayer that Prabhupada wrote to his guru when he arrived, after looking at Boston, getting back on the ship to continue on to New York, he wrote that poem, and it's all about the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta. Because of the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta, all of this is going to happen. And so he concludes by saying, "Let me just dance according to your will." All right, that's about as far as I could go on this. I'm going to read the verse again, but you've got a question. Okay, I'll read the verse, and then she's got a question over there. Diving into the water like a giant mountain, Lord Bohr divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord, "O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection." And we could say it in Sanskrit too, and you guys would understand. You want to hear the Sanskrit? Sa vajrakutanga nipata vega. Anybody remember what that first line meant? Sa vajrakutanga nipata vega. The force of falling into the ocean, yeah. The nipata vega. Nipata. Oh, I wonder. Patita means fallen. Patita pavana. So nipata, falling vega, falling force. And savajra kutanga. So the force of a mountain falling. Okay. Go ahead.
I guess with hearing this and then also contemplating on, you know, these other phenomenal incarnations of Krishna, I mean, even the illusory energy, the material energy, is phenomenal in itself, what to speak of the transcendental. And I guess spurs in me the question of trust, you know, trusting Krishna. Having faith in Krishna, you know, even in this, you know, the universal form, whatever it is, it seems that there's always a fear factor that, you know, shows up, or whether it's through awe and reverence, or I'm not sure whether, you know, this sentiment of fear becomes so realistic. So again, it goes back to trusting Krishna, no matter what form, no matter what circumstance, no matter what we see with whatever eyes we have, whether it's, you know, anointed with love or not, you know, where do we, you know, hold to this faith or trust that no matter what we see Krishna do, it's Krishna, you know, it's all loving. Eventually, it is a loving exchange.
Yeah, that was a really good question. And I think what you started off, I want to make sure I understand, you're saying every time Krishna appears, for some it's very fearful, like this giant form of Varaha. Lord Nrsimhadev, everybody was afraid except for Prahlad. And then his material energy is also really fearful, and we become affected by it, affected in fear and lamentation and problems. Tate nu kampam, can you get that one up there? That verse? Tate nu kampam. Yeah, but it's the verse before it. I want to see that one. And can you put it up there? It's the verse before. Is it possible or is it? Oh, okay. Sorry.
And I guess, like, as a child growing up in a Christian household, and I would read the Bible, and then, you know, I would see how the disciples of Jesus was, you know, how they would revert back to, like, some kind of fear, you know, or doubt, I guess. And I used to think, you know, even then, before meeting, you know, having the opportunity to take association of devotees, but just with the Christian background, but I used to think, well, didn't they just see Jesus do all of this other stuff? Why are they doubting him? You know, like, where's their faith? You know, like, why are they not? But then after, you know, also kind of putting myself in the environment of surrender or a faith-based, you know, shraddha, you know, then I realize, oh, now I know why. You know, because the material energy is always showing us something that's going to create doubt again in our minds, you know, who we are, who God is, who, you know, what's going on, you know, in this phenomenal world, you know, so I get it now. And, but again, it, you know, this whole thing about trusting Krishna, yeah, I guess is always a test for all of us.
So he's finding the verse, but most of us know the verse, tate nukampam su samikshamana punjana evatma kritam vipakam. Are you familiar with that one? No?
Not really.
Okay. How many are familiar with it? Okay.
Maybe not the Sanskrit, maybe the English. But
do you want to explain it?
What's the English? I mean, no,
you have to start on the English.
How about you? Would you like to?
It's when Lord Brahma tells Lord Krishna
that it is the rightful claim when you wait, basically, in summary.
Yeah, that was a real good brief summary, that everything's okay. But in that verse, the first word is tut, and tut, therefore. So it's referring to the previous verse, and that's the one I wanted to look at, because it's been a while since I looked at it. The one just before it. I'm putting him through a lot of work. So tut, therefore, and what that's saying is everything is your mercy.
Yes, and I think as devotees we do, yeah. We always know that that's the bottom line.
Here,
but
can
to
you
get
read
from
this?
Point A to point to that point, there's a lot of, emotions
right.
that come up,
yes.
whether it's fear or whatever, but ultimately, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, we do settle into that understanding that this is all the mercy of Krishna.
Yes, but this verse here is pretty interesting. Can you read it? Because it's hard for me.
In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But among these learned men
who could possibly
count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended into the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living beings, or living entities. Sorry.
So, at first glance, it may be hard to see the connection. Did you find anything in there?
Again, the phenomena of things, but yeah.
Let's start over again. In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities? So he's saying, you've got unlimited power. If we could count all of the particles of light coming from the sun, we still couldn't count your unlimited transcendental potencies. And you have come here for the benefit of all living entities. So there's nothing that you can't do. There's nothing that you're not aware of. And then the next verse is, tat, therefore, tat te anukampam su samikshamana. So, therefore, yeah, let's go to the... My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So again, at first glance, it's like, okay, just a verse, another verse, but it's kind of like a block of sandalwood. You just keep rubbing it, and more comes from it, and you add some rose water and camphor, and you just keep rubbing it, and you can talk on this verse, and Prabhupada brings it up throughout the Bhagavatam in his commentaries. He's bringing it up in every situation where somebody faces a problem and they see the problem as the mercy of Krishna. So instead of fearing Krishna and fearing the world, they see the whole world as being created by Krishna. And all of the problems are actually Krishna, nudging me, helping me along. Sometimes he'll say, it's like your father punishing you to correct you. He's not intending, And then there's two kinds of punishment. There's the punishment the father gives the child, or the punishment an enemy gives to another enemy. And there's a vast difference. One is trying to cripple the other is trying to help the other. And so we see all punishment that happens to us not as something crippling, but as something guiding and directing. And we see it as coming from Krishna.
Gives an analogy too of the rat, you know, in the mouth of a cat, you know, or the kitten in the mouth. So saying that a cat that's holding the kitten in his mouth is seen as love,
yeah.
But the rat sees it as death personified. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, more.
Reflecting on the mood of opening new temples, sometimes I get this feeling, well, we have a lot of our centers that are suffering, you know, from lack of devotees or lack of Lakshmis or so many problems. Should we still keep this mood of opening new temples? Opening new temples.
Okay, so you're saying a lot of temples are struggling and without enough resources or manpower. So should we keep the mood of continuing to open new temples? It's individual. I'm not a manager, but all I try to do is sit with people and read Bhagavatam. That's what I do. One-on-one, one-on-10, 20, however many are sitting there. That's what I do. And if a temple grows from it and it's a new place, then yeah. We create groups of people that hear Bhagavatam and chant Hare Krishna. That's our main, three things, and take prasad and have kirtan. Okay, four things. Just create groups of people. If the group is strong enough and they decide we need a special building for doing this, otherwise we just meet in homes. When you get so many meeting in homes, gradually it becomes obvious we could use a temple. Prabhupada was bold to establish temples and deities back in the 70s, but things were exploding and growing. They're still growing, it's just growing in a different way, grassroots. And I think the devotee sitting next to you wanted to say something.
Oh, if you were done.
That's my opinion. I'm not officially representing the entire Hare Krishna movement. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you really inspired me because this is exactly what is going on. We have a small group that we started, and now it grew up so much, and they're chanting, and now we have the feeling that we have to open in that place. Mm-hmm. So I think you gave me the answer. Thank you.
Yeah, and keep it simple.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate how you managed to pull out so much from such a small purport. And I was thinking of another water pastime. I thought of when Krishna was, when he jumped into the Jamuna to subdue Kaliya. And I always liked that, how Prabhupada says he flapped his arms, something like that, and he tightened his belt. And
like
he jumped
a wrestler,
into the
yeah.
Water. Yeah.
Oh, man, how did I forget that? Slapped his arms like a wrestler. Yeah, and according to my Bengali friends, wrestlers still do that, just to show, like. And so how old was Krishna when he did that? He was just a little kid. Seven? Yeah, at seven, boys have these skinny little arms. Oh,
did they do that?
Who in the Chaitanya Charitamrita?
There's a buddy in the water pastime.
Oh,
exactly.
You never hear about that.
Could be. There are some more water pastimes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but it was a little bit too intimate. It was Krishna and the gopis, and at one point Krishna takes Radha out where the water is deep and then lets go of her, and so she has to hold on to him, and so he's... So that's the closest I could think of ducking someone's head. Okay, Ragatmika, and then...
when Hemavati asked that question, I thought of the pastime with Srila Prabhupada, where it was in Vrindavan, and a man asked him, why are you building a new temple when there's so many temples already that need attention to, actually?
Yeah.
And he said to him, is that your wife sitting next to you? He said, yeah. He says, why did you marry her? Oh. And then Prabhupada gave the answer. He said, because you wanted to have children, your own children. He says, but there's so many orphans in the street. Why don't you take care of them? You wanted to have your own children. So I want to build a temple for my Lord. Like that.
Jai Govinda.
There was a water pastime when Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan and at the Jamuna one time. And he didn't want to go in, and the devotees were in the water. And I think they were splashing also. And then finally Prabhupada, he came down and got in the water with the devotees. Everyone was very happy.
Yeah, he encouraged them to splash, like, come on. Yeah, he liked that. Yes?
I remember one lecture Prabhupada said, I did not come to America to open a temple. I came to make devotee. Then when devotee got together, they needed a place where they could discuss and chant together. And that's why the temple came. So the idea of temple, from that, I found that the temple is not a temple, but five things we do. Have a darshan of the deity every day. If you look at it, temple is not the building itself.
Yeah.
What makes temple a temple, if we think from that lecture, it's a beautiful lecture Prabhupada gave, is a temple where the deities are wonderfully decorated. In Alachua, we just see that. And second is the association of the devotees. And then we chant together. I mean, I do this. Every day I do this. We all do this. And then we discuss Bhagavatam. And we honor prasadam. These five things are there. That's what makes temple a temple. It's not the building makes temple. Darshan of the deity, sadhu sangha, hearing, chanting, prasadam. Also,
yes.
The verse that you pointed out, there's the one line, I didn't want to say it, as more striking to me many years back, that Krishna has unlimited quality, but he gave one quality to each of us. You have a particular quality, cannot be replaced or duplicate. That is your relationship with him. We are discovering that. That's so phenomenal, so wonderful. That each of us are important in the eye of Krishna.
So that's in the verse before Tatte Nukampam.
Yes, seven, verse seven.
Uh-huh.
That he is endowed with unlimited quality, but each soul has a particular quality, cannot be replaced, cannot be duplicated. That means each soul is important to Krishna. We should respect, I mean, I should respect each soul.
So each of us has a varaha waiting to jump out of our nostril. Just like Prabhupada did. I mean, wow. Is that potential in everybody? Sure, why not? The potential is there, but how to make it, how to develop it, or as Vaisheshika is always saying, fan the flame, fan the spark, just a little tiny spark, and you fan it into a flame.
That was actually originally Prabhupada spoke to Samsundar Prabhu. That topics is there, I remember, in Chasing the Rhino. Prabhupada said, if you blow little more, it will extinguish. So you have to be very careful not to blow too much, not to blow too little. You have to let it grow, and then it can turn into blazing.
Yeah.
Each of us can turn into blazing.
Okay, so that could be, well, that is our service, to find the spark in someone and to fan it just enough, not too much. And it's so much fun watching it happen. Okay, everybody ready? Here we go. Hare Krishna.